This episode is brought to you by Intuit, the technology platform that brings financial confidence with products like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. You might have learned the recorder in school, but probably not how to navigate the financial world. Luckily, Intuit's on a mission to help with the free Intuit for Education program. It provides students with the lessons to learn essential skills, like how to build credit, file taxes, and budget. Check out their free resources at intuit.com/education.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hello and welcome to the Newcastle Natter. My name is Fergus Craig and I'm joined by Paul Doolan.
Hello.
And Dave Watson.
Did you forget my name?
No.
There just seemed to be a bit of a pause between and Dave Watson.
It's called suspense, Dave.
Yeah, suspense. Because, you know, it could be one of the many other regular guests we have on this podcast. I'm just looking at our podcast app, the one I use. The last podcast that we released was on the 16th of August, more than a month ago. There have been a lot of matches since then. I propose that we go through each of those matches now in full detail. No, I do not. We are recording this perhaps for the first time ever. This might be the first time in 10 years or whatever that we've recorded in Newcastle Natter immediately after a game. We have, as at time of recording, we have only about an hour ago finished our first Champions League tie for 20 years. And we started with a big one, AC Milan away at the San Siro. Dave, did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I really did. Do you want me to expand on that, or
how did you feel before kickoff?
I think I said it to you guys that my heart was pounding. I was so nervous, so excited about it, and my head was trying to just calm me down and be like, it doesn't really matter. We're 3-5 years ahead of schedule, and it's the first, it's the away game. We've got like these players missing, all the rest of it. Just like lower your expectations. Don't get too excited. Don't let yourself get too excited. But fuck it. I enjoyed it all. I kicked every ball. It was a nerve-wracking game, but I really enjoyed it.
Not a great game for the neutral, probably, but for those who are invested like us, Paul, it was very, very tense, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it wasn't a bad game for the neutral, because at least there were a lot of efforts on goal, just only one of them by us, and it was in the 94th minute.
There were plenty of incidents as well. You know, there were plenty of things where the only thing that stopped it being a high-scoring game was the profligacy of Milan, our final ball, their final ball at times, Nick Pope playing fucking brilliantly, and a few of our lot just putting bodies on the line.
I was in the lead up to the game during the day. I wasn't nervous, but I was thinking, oh, you know, this could be quite humiliating, or you know that. Just thinking, it's AC Milan at the San Siro. But then when they were coming out and they were showing the team sheets, and I was thinking about it, I was like, AC Milan is a huge brand name, right? It's like one of the most, it's like in the top 10 most famous clubs in Europe. Hmm. But their best player from last season has just come to us. And they have in their squad, they have like quite a few Chelsea rejects. I'm not saying they're a bad side, but I was as the side came up, I was like, oh yeah, it's not Maldini and Pirlo. It's like a different. Yeah, it's not the AC Milan of old, and we are not the Newcastle United of old, certainly not of 5-10 years ago. So
no, but they are last season's Champions League semi-finalists.
Yeah. They are.
I think the main two thoughts I had at the start of this game was groups of death are quite hard, aren't they? It's the first one. It's like, oh yeah, it's going to be difficult. And the other one was just, it just felt surreal.
Yeah.
It didn't feel real in any way. It didn't.
Well, what summed it up probably better than anything was Jacob Murphy's face. As the camera, if you missed this, as the camera panned along while the Champions League anthem was played, Jacob Murphy did nothing to hide his excitement. He's such a six-year-old boy in a lovable way.
Yeah.
I'm happy to as surprised as anyone that he was in the starting 11.
But I think to touch on what Paul was saying there, that like it does feel surreal, because even though we deservedly finished fourth last season based on our performance, you have to say that like nobody was expecting us to finish in the Champions League spots. And for us to be there now, we're not. You look at the squad, and Jacob Murphy's a good example. We should have better, like a Champions League club should have more depth. Like you look at the players that they brought on during the game to you know, reinvigorate their side and everything. And it was, they were good football, like Champions League level footballers coming on. Whereas we were bringing on, like, with all due respect to them, like Elliot Anderson. And that's not lifting the quality level or it's a big old jump down. So it is surreal to see this squad playing Champions League football.
I don't know about that. I mean, the statisticians have it that we, before a ball was kicked, we were the favourites to qualify from this group.
Well, no, I think that thing was we were the favourites to get to the quarterfinals, but that's because we're the only one of the teams in our group that can't draw Man City in the next round.
Okay, fair enough. Okay. I've slightly misinterpreted that then. Fair enough.
But there are Opta stats that suggest that Newcastle United are, if not favourite to get out of the group in one way or another, we're amongst the top two favourites to get out of the group. I think that's predicated largely on the performances last season.
Yeah, all optimism from me or from statisticians is not based on what's come so far this season.
Yeah, exactly.
We did last year finish fourth in the Premier League. So, I mean, like, we're not FC Copenhagen. You know.
I think the other thing to remember as well, away games in Europe, like, they're easier than they used to be, but they're still very hard. Lots of teams don't get many wins. Like, a lot of Champions League winners have gone without getting any wins in the group stage away from home.
So we've just got a 0-0, a point at the San Siro. We're not getting into the bones of the game yet, but like we've just got that. This could be our hardest tie in the group stage, couldn't it? Could easily. They were the semi-finalists away. It's the furthest to travel in the group. It's either this or PSG away, isn't it? So,
yeah, you'd say that, yeah, definitely that going to, I think it is the hardest one because it's the first game back in 20 odd years. There's a lot of inexperience in the side. It's at the beginning of the season, so some of our newer players haven't fully settled in yet. I think, yes, 100% that this fixture that happened tonight is likely to be our hardest one. But I think we're still likely lose at PSG.
Okay, so here's the question. We did get a point. Paul, did we deserve it?
No.
No, we didn't, did we?
No, we didn't. We didn't at all. The XG, I think they got over 2. We got 0.1 something.
Yeah.
They were useless in front of goal. Nick Pope made some good saves, but I think you'd have been disappointed if any of those had gone in.
And yeah.
They were wasteful.
A lot of the game felt like the last 5 minutes of a game, didn't it? From their perspective, they were just battering our goal quite often.
It was that type of defending. Considering we played Man City away quite recently and didn't see any of this, it felt like the Pardew season when we finished 5th, where every game you'd have Danny Simpson throwing his body at a shot like it was a grenade.
But I did think that it was interesting that they had like some, I think it was like 25 shots and 7 were on target. And of those 7, I would say 5 of them were like, you know, straight at Nick Pope. I'd be interested to see the post-shot XG when that stat becomes available, because I don't think he had to make a particularly difficult save.
No, he didn't make any amazing saves. But they definitely created a heck of a lot more than we did. And although the possession stats were quite equal, they were dominant. And they just seemed, it felt like to me like they always had an extra man.
Yeah. So what they did was they made it so that Calabria, their right back, he was pushing into the middle, which like it just gave them that extra man in that like in the space in front of their centre halves. And what their goalkeeper was doing was chipping the ball over, and so it was evading our high press, which meant that they were able to like get more control of the ball higher up the pitch and in the centre of the pitch higher up. And we weren't doing what we used to do last season, which is putting their fullbacks, their centre halves, and their keeper under so much pressure that they cough up the ball high up the pitch for us to, you know, take advantage of.
Kieran Trippier, I felt like his experience was very very valuable, particularly in the closing stages of that game. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that tackle, for him to win, they were on the counter. He from nowhere appeared, won the possession, kept it in, and then passed it like got it to one of our players. And we should have used that as a basis to spring our own counter attack. Unfortunately, Bruno put it straight out of play. But like all through the game, he was everywhere he needed to be. He was finding pockets of space. He was putting in the little niggly fouls that never get you a yellow card, but just stop a counter-attack in its place. His delivery from set pieces was all right, better than it has been. I think he was. It goes to show like what value experience has in this competition.
Yeah, so, I think Milan showed there.
Go on, Paul.
I think Milan showed their experience at this type of game. They were brilliant at the niggly fouls. So anytime we looked like we were going to start a counter-attack, it would just be not enough to get you a yellow, even though they got 4 or 5 yellows. But it just stopped us as soon as we got any momentum, or we stopped ourselves a lot of the time. There were a lot of desperate... God, felt like a lot of the time it was Bruno or Trippier having to thread a perfect like 40-yard ball to Isak, who would just try and hold it up. We miss a bit of the running we used to have in midfield. I think Longstaff made a difference though compared to recent games. But Willock's getting better every game he misses.
I saw Longstaff getting some shit online. I think people find it hard to value a player who came up through the ranks and, you know, is not an international or anything. But I thought he was one of our better players, Longstaff.
I thought he was the best of our midfield 3, yeah. Definitely tonight.
She's saying something.
Well, yeah, Tonali's not quite settled in yet, has he? I think that the Villa game might have weirdly set him back in a way, because you just think, oh, this guy's oven ready.
It might have been the visit to Wetherspoons after the Villa game.
He's lost his will to live.
He's like, well, okay, well, if these are the standards required in this country. We've talked about our right back. Should we talk about our left back?
Yeah, because I've seen Dan Burn getting a lot of shit online, and not, in my opinion, balanced. I thought defensively, I don't think he put a foot wrong. I think he was defensively solid. He kept that our left hand side marshaled. He didn't offer anything going forward, but then we need to remember, A, he's a fucking centre-back that we've played as a full-back through necessity, I guess. And going back to what I said earlier, if we manage to do that high press with everybody, you've got Trippier moving forward and you play that three as a centre, you know, those three and like Burn, Botman and Shah as a centre-back three. So he wasn't needing to attack last season, but this season I think we need an attacking fullback, and he's not that. So I think the criticism he was getting was that he's shite, and he's not shite. He's just not an attacking fullback. He's not Trippier. He's not Theo Hernandez. He's just not that player.
No, but we've had two clean sheets in a row, and he's been a big part of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he definitely deserves credit for that, and he's definitely not shit. But it's not just the lack of attacking flair that you get from him. He did also, tonight, I thought, give the ball away quite often. Not in a dangerous place, but he also in our own half. We're finding it hard to like get moves going.
Mm.
And it was often a case of either after two or three passes, someone either having to or deciding that they felt that they had to play some kind of killer ball.
Yeah.
That isolated Isaac, or just a little bit of sloppy, or maybe it was nervous passing.
Yeah.
I think Dan Burn was the one who I noticed do that on the most occasions. You know,
I
think there was an element of nerves to the whole team. You could see it, like you say, with Jacob Murphy in the lineup. I think if you take that all into account, first game in the Champions League for 20 years, Eddie Howe's first attendance at any Champions League game. As a manager or fan.
I was thinking, I've been to a Champions League.
I think to get out of that with a point away in Italy, it's really good.
I think it's going on, because we didn't play particularly well up top. I think people are maybe more disappointed than they should be with this result, because I think this is a really, really good result. As in the Premier League, if you can go anywhere and get a point, that's good. You know, it's only like Man City and Arsenal who look at every fixture and want the 3 points from every fixture. Everybody else should be looking at most places as like, point away from home is a good result.
I think most people would have taken a point away at AC Milan. I think that maybe there's some disappointment about our performance. But let's have a quick break, and then we'll talk a little bit more about that game and just how the season's going as a whole. And then maybe if we've got some time, we can all just talk about our feelings and stuff. Men's cool. Mental health. Okay, let's have a break, and we'll be back in a moment.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Going for your first ever run around the park. Literally running errands all over town.
running for the finish line and your personal best. If you run, you're a runner. Find the shoes and clothes to run your way at newbalance.com/running. New Balance. Run your way.
Welcome back to the Newcastle Natter. My name is Fergus Craig, and I'm here with Dave Watson and Paul Doolan. Good break, guys.
Yeah.
I sort of said that like I was on commercial radio, didn't
yeah.
I?
Yeah.
Even intended, but like, you know.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll be talking to someone who thinks that you know how you can get a dog to walk and learn some new tricks.
I've not been there, but the San Siro looks like a weird stadium.
Yeah, it looks like
very
a
very 80s.
Park. It is 80s, isn't it?
Yeah, it looks very 80s and quite scary.
Yeah, it is.
Speaking of which, as we record, apparently, according to Twitter, Paul says that they've closed the metro and all the Newcastle fans have got a 2-hour walk back to the centre of Milan.
It has apparently now reopened. Breaking news.
Okay. So that was just like
the Newcastle Supporters Club. But I think a lot of people would have started the walk back.
Right. Okay. Sounds stressful.
Yeah.
Okay. I wonder if I had a good day out.
Well, sounds like one person didn't have a particularly good one. At least one person stabbed. Which is awful.
Yes, it is.
It's very Italy and Europe is the thing.
Yes.
I think they're stable.
Hopefully, yes.
It did, apart from the bad side of the fan experience over there, it did look a lot of fun by the canal.
Yeah.
Did you see the bowling?
I did. Yes. I saw the skidding in the water on the ground.
Did you see the man try to have a race with a rowboat?
A rowing boat, yeah.
Yep, yeah. In the canal.
Oh, I'd love to go to one of the European away days, but
yeah,
I neither can or nor deserve it.
You get the Eurostar and go away.
Say that again?
I think the Dortmund game would be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt. Paris is a shithole. I wouldn't want to go to Paris.
I wouldn't want to go to the Paris Stadium, but I would happily go to Paris to watch the game with a load of Newcastle fans.
I like that.
So it would be quicker and cheaper for me than getting to Newcastle.
That just slipped by there. Dave Watson's review of Paris. It's not going to go on the... On the literature, Dave's review of TripAdvisor review of Paris. Paris is a shithole. Famously a shithole.
It is. I mean, it looks nice on TV, but Paris itself, it's a shithole.
What the hell?
Wow, you heard it here first.
Yeah.
So. Let's just talk about the season as a whole. The last podcast we recorded after the Aston Villa game, and I wasn't involved in that podcast, but it's fair to say that you two were very excited. I think you both upped your predictions for where we'd finish by a couple of places on the base, which I think I would have done as well if I'd have been on that podcast. But it did, listening to it from the outside, I did think, I think we do this every single season. Our first game, we like then extrapolate from that. Actually, I'm changing all my predictions. And often our first game goes well in the last few years. But since then, it's been a bit of a slog, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's difficult though, because I think even in that, you know, the ruddy glow of that impressive victory, I think we were still saying that these upcoming fixtures are really hard. And I would be, I can't remember, but I'm fairly confident I would have said I'd be happy with like 7 points from the from these first five fixtures, I'd be happy with 7 points. And I think, to be honest, we weren't far off getting like 7 to 9 points from those first five fixtures. I think just that Liverpool game, it was a bit of naivety and a bit of, them being able to bring on, what was it, like nigh on £100 million worth of talent from the bench. Like, nobody in the league has as hard a start as we did. Nobody. Those first five fixtures were unreal. And yet we've come away with 6 points from them. And I'm fine with that. I think we've got them out of the way. Yes, the Liverpool game was disappointing for one reason, and yes, the Brighton result performance was bad. But yeah, 6 points from those. I think we only got 7 from them last season. So,
yeah, I think there's a very real possibility that the 3 games we've lost so far will be to the teams that will finish first, second, and third. You never know.
Brighton's a big shout, but I like it.
I could see Brighton being top three. I think Arsenal will probably finish above Liverpool, but
that fucking Liverpool game,
honestly.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a while ago now, and you know we should have recorded a podcast after it, but we have been, and I apologize for this, so lackadaisical in putting out podcasts. But that Liverpool game, where they were down to 10 men for a long time, we were 1-0 up for a long time.
Mm.
We were at home.
Well, I think the Liverpool game sums up so much of our season in that the first half, we still had our intensity and we looked really, really good. As soon as we don't have that, I don't know, just mistakes creep in and it's all a bit nervy. Mm-hmm. I feel like the Brighton game, I mean, we're not going to be as intense as we were last season. And it's not going to be that level of high pressing all the time because we've got so many extra games. But we looked, I don't know, it was a sickening one, the Liverpool game. I watched it in a sports bar in Toulouse with almost exclusively all Scousers. Toulouse must have a massive Scouse community.
But we, like you say, like we won't have that intensity because we've got all these extra games, but not yet. Not when we were playing those games.
No, that's true.
Playing the same amount of games as anyone else. And, you know, we've improved our squad. But the midfield isn't quite working yet, is it?
No. But what I wanted to do about that intensity question, I was wondering, are we trying to play a different way to kind of mitigate the impact that these extra fixtures are going to have on us, and that different way just isn't particularly working right now. Like, instead of playing that high press, perhaps we're trying to play a more counterattack style, or maybe we're trying to play a more like relying on an efficacy of pass that we just don't have at the minute. Like, I'm not sure, but I don't know I don't know if that intensity is missing by design or not.
I'm not sure it's necessarily by
to me.
Sorry.
It would seem like a strange thing to do to me, to change the way we play on the basis of what could just be 6 extra fixtures. To me, it's not like we're in the Europa League. It's like, and we've added to our squad players like Livramento and Hall, young players with hopefully a lot of energy.
Mm. Yeah. And hey, guys, I'm just asking questions.
You're just asking questions. Do you know what I mean?
I think what's been quite telling is the way we press, just, I don't think it is a plan because we're still in the right positions for it. But if you look at when Wilson came on in the Brighton game, he's suddenly closing down much more intensely than Isak was. I think there's been a lot of that across the front three. Not from Gordon necessarily. He's looked very bright so far this season. But it doesn't seem to be there. We had a similar thing before the cup final last year with just a big fixture looming and it affected everyone in the build up. Maybe it was just the Champions League first game.
And maybe it's partly here's some real COD psychology. But we are the team. We've got eight Newcastle fans in our squad, people who grew up supporting the club, which is more than any other team. And I wonder if in the lead up to the cup final and in the lead up to starting the Champions League, in a weird way, whether that sort of weight of importance like plays. I mean, it's what a ridiculous theory to just come up with, but it might.
I mean, I could understand that for maybe Longstaff and possibly Dan Byrne, but like Jacob Murphy
hadn't played till tonight.
Lewis Hall, I mean, are they
okay? Fine.
I don't know. I think
in general, other than in the Villa game, it's just they seem a bit sort of disparate. Like they're not sort of
yeah. Well, I think there's a lot of new relationships there as well.
Yeah.
I think if everyone was fit, I think Howe now would be doing a midfield three of Bruno, Joelinton and Sean Longstaff and bedding. If Sean Longstaff had been fully fit for the Villa game, I think he would have started there.
Yeah.
You never know. We might return to that.
I'd also expect to see Almiron return to the first team ahead of Barnes.
Yeah.
Even though Barnes is a bigger goal threat, I think what Almiron and Longstaff provide us with is that like that comfort, that knowledge, that understanding with each other. I think there's no doubt that Tonali and Barnes are better footballers, but I think right now they need to be bedded in. I think that's why we haven't done that with Hall and Livramento, why we're going to introduce them bit by bit is because we have that freedom. Whereas I think with Almiron and Longstaff, those injuries have kind of forced us to play Tonali and Barnes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of indignation, isn't there, about the fact that Hall and Livramento haven't been playing yet. And, I understand that to a degree. But, I mean, Lewis Hall, none of us have ever seen him play, but in our heads, and I include myself in it, this, he is a phenomenal footballer. He's a special player. In our heads, none of us have like really seen him play, except for the odd clip.
Well, this is it. I think he was great in Chelsea's game against us last season. He really was. He looked a phenomenal talent, but people seem to think that he's going to necessarily recreate that level of performance against Liverpool or Brighton or whatever. Like they think he's going to definitely be that good. It could just be that he was a really, a big prospect who had a really good game that time. But they haven't bought him just to stick him in the under 18s. He's consistently on the bench. He will get game time. He will, in my opinion, replace Hall Byrne as the number one left back before the end of this season.
I think they maybe weren't the most urgent areas where we needed depth. You'd say like a right centre back, or if you look at our defence, looked so all over the place as soon as Botman was out.
Mm.
That felt kind of urgent. But then Trippier's just turned 33. Dan Byrne's a centre back. They're going to get games. They've been bought for depth and rotation this season. We can't judge whether that's been a success or not when we've not really had the fixture congestion and they've not played a game yet.
Just occurred to me, depth and rotation would be a good name for a 1990s garage act.
It's true.
But I'll just leave that as an aside and we'll carry on.
I think before we move off Hall and Livramento, one thing that I mentioned in a WhatsApp group during one of the Saturdays, watching Match of the Day, it's pretty clear that the top sides all have attacking fullbacks who get past their man, get past the winger or the fullback and deliver crosses and are a real source of like creative creativity for the top sides. So I would hopefully see Livramento and Hall as that's the end game, and they might not be their best this season, but they're young, so
that's well, why. Our next game is against Sheffield United. It's away on Sunday, which, to be fair, is a fair bit of time to recover, but they've got to get back from Italy. And the Metro was closed, so that's going to be difficult on the squad. Do we think that maybe one of them might get introduced on Sunday?
Yeah. Yeah, I think also you'd see, because Isaac started against Milan, I wouldn't be surprised to see Wilson start against Sheffield.
Isaac, I mean, whoever was up front today was going to be really isolated, weren't they?
Mm.
But Isaac's not had a great start to the season, I would say.
No, I think we brought him off far too late today as well. He looked... Yeah. So, like, Dan Byrne was getting really exposed. Isaac just not defending at all. It was sort of, it looked like shades of St. Maximin, but I think he was just knackered. I don't think it was.
I thought when he tried to, there was a pass on, he was on the halfway line, and he's like, no, I'm going to do what I did against Everton last season. I'm going to beat six players.
Yeah. I think that our biggest issue is the centre of midfield. I think once we get that problem solved, I think everything else just falls into place really, really easily. Like, our defence is going to look better. Our striker is going to look much more involved, much more part of the game. I honestly think once we can get Bruno, Joe Linton, Tonali, Longstaff, whoever it is, that three, whoever it is, I think once we solve it, that's everything else just falls into place.
Yeah. It should be solvable, right? Because
we've
got some good options there, right, Paul?
Yeah, I think the main problem is a lot of people who've not had much time on the pitch together. A lot of those triangles, they're just new triangles now. Like, before last season, we think it was Trippier, Longstaff, Miggy. That triangle's not really played together very much. All our sort of main relationships, they've not really started games together. So these things take time. I think Tonali will be a first choice before long, but I don't think he's quite ready yet. And I don't think he's just positionally a bit all over the place. He gets far too far forward. You saw it against Brighton, suddenly there's no midfield and they can just play through us. But I think it'll come. He's a top player.
You've got to get their adjustable set squares out and start making some triangles.
Exactly. I think against Sheffield United, I wouldn't be surprised if the back five stays the same after two clean sheets in a row. I'm not sure he'll bring in Hall or Livramento till there's an injury. But I think you'll see Longstaff probably start, maybe even Elliot Anderson. And definitely Wilson.
I think he looked good again, by the way.
Yeah.
I think there were a couple of times where he looked a little like he got out-muscled a couple of times, but that's going to happen. But I think he had good touch of the ball, good awareness, good use of the ball for the most part. I think he's a good option. I think, to touch on what you were saying about the back five staying the same, I wouldn't be surprised. No, I wouldn't be surprised if they named the same back five. But I just think, you know, if we're two goals up with half an hour to go, that's when you give Hall his debut or give Livramento some more time. I think the game against Sheffield, because we're quite fortunate that we've got a game against Sheffield, then we've got Man City in the League Cup, then we've got Burnley, and then we've got PSG. It's quite handy that we're facing two of the worst sides in the Premier League this season in this kind of like compressed period of tough fixtures.
Yeah. So you would hope that out of those two Premier League fixtures that we've got coming up, and I would imagine that we will prioritise them over the League Cup tie against Man City. You would hope that that's 6 points, wouldn't you? Sheffield United, yeah. They've got 1 point so far this season, and they just had that sickening late loss to Spurs.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to be playing at home. There's either going to be a reaction or more likely just a real loss of confidence. And it's the same for Burnley so far. They've only got a point as well.
Yeah. And specifically, they've got points like Sheffield got a point against Everton, which is no mean feat. It's no big thing these days. Like, that's where they should be getting points from. And Burnley took a point from Notts Forest. Again, it's not like they've had really rough run of fixtures, and this point has just been like snatched like from a top side. So I would definitely be identifying these two as 6 points.
Yeah. So our two easiest games on paper so far by a country mile. I think the Man City game in the League Cup as well, that's probably when we'll see Hall and Livramento get a start.
But that is, in a weird way, that's some pressure. Those two Premier League games, because if we do not get 6 points from that, I'm going to start asking some serious questions.
What, like?
Pressures for tyres.
Like, when's the next fixture? Like, how much for a pie? No, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Starts to look like there are a lot of reasons, most of which we filled this podcast with, a lot of excuses for the start to the season that we've had thus far.
Mm.
If we don't get 6 points from those two games, those excuses start to become harder to make. I'm not talking about like, is it time to start questioning the house position or whatever, or like, I'm not saying club in crisis or anything, but it starts to become a difficult start to the season.
Yeah.
Turns into a genuinely quite bad start to the season.
Yeah. I think one of those two games will be a, in quotes, statement win.
Wow.
I feel like Burnley at home could be a good 4-5-0.
I think Burnley at home, we need to put a marker down and put them to the sword. I think Sheffield away, it's a tough game because it's an away game in the Premier League. Like they've all got their challenges. I would enjoy a thoroughly professional performance in both of them. Just a comfortable 2-0 win, get the job done early, take the foot off the gas, stay out the game. That's what I would like to happen.
Well, I hope you get it, Dave.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's leave it there. Hopefully, if the Newcastle United squad have had a tricky start to the season, then the Newcastle Natter podcast has had an appalling start to the season. This is only our second edition since the season kicked off. First featuring me. Hopefully, we'll be able to put them out more regularly. But in the meantime, thank you very much. It's been lovely to spend some time with you again. Dave Watson.
Thank you, Fergus.
Paul Doolan.
Thank you.
And you, the Newcastle Natter listener. Thank you. Goodbye.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.